Greetings. This is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, June 6th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading with the front page under the title University of Illinois. It's the honor of a lifetime. University of Wisconsin-Madison Provost Charles Lee Isbell selected as UI's next chancellor, with confirmation vote set for Monday. Story by Luke Taylor. Out of Urbana. The University of Illinois' search for its 11th chancellor has come to an end with the announcement that Charles Lee Isbell will take the role. Isbell is currently serving as provost and vice chancellor for academic affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Before he took that role in 2023, he spent 20 years at Georgia Tech as its executive associate dean, then dean of the College of Computing. Once Isbell receives official approval from the UI Board of Trustees, he'll be set to start as chancellor on August 1st. It's the honor of a lifetime to be appointed to the role of chancellor, and I'm deeply grateful to President Killeen and the Board of Trustees, Isbell said. I'm energized by this chance to serve the citizens of Illinois and advance the mission of learning, discovery, engagement, and economic development. He will succeed current Chancellor Robert Jones, who is set to take over as president at the University of Washington after his time at the UI comes to a close. UI President Tim Killeen has high praise for the new appointee, saying Isbell emerged as a standout in an extensive national search. As I grew to know Dr. Isbell, I soon realized that he would be the next chancellor of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, Killeen said. He has a clear, creative, and inspiring vision for what public higher education can and should be, and for how this great university will continue to work for the people of our state in the years ahead. Killeen also highlighted Isbell's expertise in technology, among other fields, as valuable knowledge to make the UI a place where the future we need comes to life. Isbell is expected to be approved at a special meeting of the UI Board of Trustees, which will take place at 10 a.m. Monday at the Illinois Ballroom in the iHotel and Conference Center. It's been a pleasure to work with Charles on behalf of our great university, and I wish him every success in his new role, Wisconsin Chancellor Jennifer Mnuchin said. I have deeply appreciated his powerful intellect, his future-looking perspective on the direction of our university, and his dry sense of humor, and I look forward to continuing to work with him as a fellow Big Ten chancellor. Isbell and Jones both spent time at another Big Ten school prior to becoming UI chancellor. Jones spent more than three decades at the University of Minnesota from 1978 to 2013. As I prepare to depart UW-Madison, I'm especially grateful for the incredible opportunity to work with Chancellor Mnuchin, our leadership team, and my many talented colleagues, Isbell said. While I'm thrilled to join the Fighting Illini, I will always draw deeply on my Badger experiences. Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman highlighted the changing world of college sports in welcoming Isbell to town. Our new chancellor is a proven innovator, which will be important as we execute our rapidly evolving strategy to lead amongst the generational change sweeping across the college athletics landscape, Whitman said. Isbell's academic career began at Georgia Tech, where he earned a bachelor's degree in information and computer science, followed by a master's and PhD in electrical engineering and computer science from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Today, he's a fellow of the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence and the Association for Computing Machinery, and an elected member of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Isbell has written more than 100 academic papers, including research on artificial intelligence and machine learning, focused on interactive and human-centered systems with applications in education, ethics, and social impact. He's also seen nationwide recognition for advocating for broadened participation in STEM fields, especially computing, and working to create more inclusive academic pathways. Moving to the next story on the front page. OSF Healthcare, Urbana Hospital shifting focus to behavioral health. As part of consolidation with Danville campus, some of its services will be relocated. Story by Jana Wiersema. Out of Urbana, a local healthcare provider has indicated that some services will be shifted away from its Urbana location as it consolidates two hospital campuses. OSF Healthcare announced Thursday morning that its Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana and Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville will be coming together as one hospital with two campuses. The plan will be implemented on January 1, 2026, pending approval from the Illinois Health Facilities and Services Review Board. The timeline is to be really collaborative and strategic around what this is going to look like in this community for the rest of 2025, with a goal of implementing all of these services that get shifted to either Danville or Bloomington by January of 26, said OSF President J.T. Barnhart. He added that OSF is committed to providing health care in Urbana and feels the best way to pursue that goal is by expanding behavioral health and utilizing specialists in markets where there's a demand for those specialties and where they can be used more efficiently. The company said that the Urbana location will focus on inpatient behavioral health services while also continuing to offer emergency services, inpatient beds, diagnostic services, labs, and other clinic offerings. The campus will feature expanded mental health services for young adults, patients with co-occurring medical and psychiatric conditions, and seniors in need of geriatric psychiatric care. Barnhart said the location currently has 30 licensed behavioral health beds and will add 10 by renovating two acute care units. He shared that one reason for the changes is a decrease in utilization of the services at the Urbana Center. We've seen a consensus decrease over the last few years, and it's made it a little tough to recruit physicians, recruit specialists to the community to serve the hospital and to serve the market, he said. At the same time, we've seen a dramatic increase in the need for behavioral health services. The company also cited ongoing financial losses, reduced use of inpatient beds, and the departure of key physicians, and said the consolidation plan would help to avoid duplication and address staffing shortages. Barnhart said OSF will be in communication with patients about the transition. There will be options for you to continue to access OSF and provider groups, he said. That might be virtual care, it might be shifting to providers in other markets, but you are the focus of everything that we do. When asked what services will be offered in Danville under the plan and which ones will be moved away from Urbana, Barnhart told the News Gazette that OSF is still having internal conversations with team members about these matters. The company stated that while the transition may bring change for some of its employees, there are over 170 job openings locally and many other positions available across the organization. Barnhart said it's difficult to estimate how many staff members will be affected and noted that OSF hopes to shift some into the expanded behavioral health program. We also know what our needs are both in Bloomington and Danville, with some of the strategy of shifting some of the services to both locations. We're going to need mission partners at both of those facilities, he said. We're very hopeful that we'll keep a very high percentage of mission partners still employed within OSF. Urbana Park District. Outgoing director handing reins to chosen successor. Story by Jana Wiersema. Out of Urbana. For the past 4 years, Rachel Lenz has worked alongside Urbana Park District Executive Director Tim Bartlett on the Board of Directors for Illinois Parks Association Risk Services, an agency that provides insurance for park districts. After the board met this past January, Bartlett had some important news to share with Lenz. He pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, I need to tell you I'm retiring and I want you to come take care of my baby, she said. And I was like, I don't know what that means, Tim. I'm going to need a little bit more detail. Over the next hour, Bartlett told her all about Urbana, and Lenz later visited the city several times. The more I came and saw what was going on here, the more encouraged I felt, she said. And I think the real selling point for me was when I got to do a meet and greet with the staff as part of the interview process. They asked tough and fair questions, but to hear them talk about some of the work they did, how protective they were of their district and this community they serve, this is a group I want to be a part of. Lenz joined the team as executive director on May 21st. Bartlett, whose final day is Friday, has been helping with the transition. We're trying to cram as much as we can, he said. This includes meetings with various community partners, such as the city and the school district, to discuss their current goals and how the park district can collaborate with them. Lenz described her first week as drinking water from a fire hose. There's a lot going on here, which is awesome, she said. Bartlett said he noticed Lenz's maturity, thoughtful approach, and great ideas during their time together on the iParks board, and found himself thinking she'd be a good person for Urbana. She'll do a very good job, said Bartlett, who also helped to promote local candidates during the search. It's good to get new vision and new ideas for Urbana. He noted that the timing also aligns with other changes in the community, such as the recent inauguration of Urbana Mayor Deshaun Williams, new Park District commissioners, and shifts in city staff. Lenz, who was born and raised in Knoxville, Illinois, said parks have been a big part of her life since childhood. I grew up going to campgrounds with my parents, fishing with my dad, riding bikes way too fast down hills in the campground, riding off-road into the creek. Whether that's print-worthy or not, it's funny, she said. I started going to camps when I was 6 or 7. It's just been a part of who I am. Growing up, Lenz went to a camp that would go on service trips, which included helping out at a residential camp for individuals with disabilities. I had not had any experience working with individuals with disabilities in the past, she said, fully fell in love with it. Lenz decided to major in therapeutic recreation at Western Illinois University and interned at the Northern Illinois Special Recreation Association in Crystal Lake. After completing her bachelor's degree, she then earned a master's in recreation administration. Lenz served her graduate assistantship with the McDonough County Special Recreation Association, where she was in charge of recreation programs and Special Olympics teams. She went on to become director of the association. After 3 years in the role, Lenz joined the Macomb Park District as superintendent of special events and facilities. She became the district's first female executive director in 2017 and served for 8 years before accepting the position in Urbana. We got to accomplish some really cool projects, Lenz said. Probably the one I'm most proud of, or that I'm proud of the most, is the Patton Park project, which is in its final stage of development. So we took a park that was run down and had a lot of taboo recreation, a lot of vandalism, and turned it into something that the community frequents and they're proud of. Lenz said there are a lot of exciting things going on at the Urbana Park District, and she believes it is on a really good trajectory. Her main goal during her first year is to learn about the park district and soak it all in. I've talked with our leadership team, Lenz said. I want to attend their staff meetings purely to understand what all are we doing, getting a better sense of our inner operations, and really just seeing how I play a part in making sure that the success Urbana Park District is having doesn't slow down just because there's transition. Lenz plans to attend several Park District events over the next few months. She is also looking forward to MLK Jetty Roads Neighborhood Day on June 28th, which is when the park district will unveil its draft master plan for King Park improvements. "If people see me, just come up and say hi," Lynn said. "Right now, it's all about meeting people and getting to know the community." Moving now to national and world news. Colorado court proceedings. 118 felony counts filed against suspect in firebomb attack. Out of Boulder, Colorado, in the AP. A man accused of yelling "Free Palestine" and throwing Molotov cocktails at demonstrators calling for the release of Israeli hostages in Gaza was charged Thursday with attempted murder, assault, cruelty to animals, and explosives crimes in a Colorado court. Mohammed Sabri Suleiman, 45, was advised of the charges during a court hearing in Boulder, where he appeared in person. He has been jailed since his arrest following Sunday's attack. Investigators say Suleiman, who posed as a gardener, had planned it for a year. Authorities have said 15 people and a dog were victims of the attack. Suleiman is charged with 118 counts, including attempt to commit murder, assault in the first and third degrees, use of explosive or incendiary devices, cruelty to animals, and crime of violence. He has also been charged with a hate crime in federal court and is jailed on a $10 million cash bond. Suleiman's attorney, Catherine Harold, waived a formal reading of the charges Thursday in court. A preliminary hearing has been set for July 15th. Suleiman had planned to kill all of the roughly 20 participants the weekly demonstration at the popular Pearl Street pedestrian mall, but he threw just two of his 18 Molotov cocktails while yelling "Free Palestine," police said. Suleiman didn't carry out his full plan because he got scared and had never hurt anyone before, police wrote in an affidavit. According to an FBI affidavit, Suleiman told police he was driven by a desire to kill all Zionist people, a reference to the movement to establish and protect a Jewish state in Israel. Authorities said he expressed no remorse about the attack. Boulder County officials said in a news release that the victims include 8 women and 7 men, ranging in age from 25 to 88, and a dog. Details about how the victims were impacted should be explained in criminal charges set to be filed Thursday, said Boulder County District Attorney's Office spokesperson Shannon Carbone. Mideast conflict. Israel. Bodies of 2 Israeli-American hostages recovered. Story out of Tel Aviv in the AP. Israel has recovered the bodies of 2 Israeli-American hostages taken in Hamas's October 7, 2023 attack that ignited the war in the Gaza Strip. Israeli strikes overnight and into Thursday, meanwhile, killed at least 22 people, including 3 local journalists who were in the courtyard of a hospital, according to health officials in the territory. The military said it targeted a militant in that strike. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the remains of Judy Weinstein and Gad Haggai were recovered and returned to Israel in a special operation by the army and the Shin Bet Internal Security Agency. "Together with all the citizens of Israel, my wife and I extend our heartfelt condolences to the dear families. Our hearts ache for the most terrible loss. May their memory be blessed," he said in a statement. Kibbutz Nir Oz announced the deaths of Weinstein, 70, and Haggai, 72, both of whom had Israeli and U.S. citizenship, in December 2023. Weinstein was also a Canadian citizen. The military said they were killed in the October 7th attack and taken into Gaza by the Mujahideen Brigades, the small armed group that it said had also abducted and killed Shiri Bibas and her 2 small children. The army said it recovered the remains of Weinstein and Haggai overnight into Thursday from Gaza's southern city of Khan Yunis. The couple were taking an early morning walk near their home in Kibbutz Nir Oz on the morning of October 7 when Hamas militants stormed across the border and rampaged through several army bases and farming communities. Trump administration. Governments vow to push back against U.S. travel ban. Out of Washington in the AP. Officials in some of the 12 countries whose citizens will be soon banned from visiting the United States denounced President Donald Trump's move to resurrect a hallmark policy of his first term and vowed Thursday to push back against the U.S. The ban, which was announced Wednesday, takes effect at 12:01 a.m. Monday, a cushion that may avoid the chaos that unfolded at airports nationwide when a similar measure took effect with virtually no notice in 2017. Trump, who signaled plans for a new ban upon taking office again in January, appears to be on firmer ground this time after the Supreme Court sided with him. The 12 countries, Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, include some of the world's poorest nations. Seven more countries, Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela, now faced heightened travel restrictions. In the Central African nation of Chad, President Mahamat Debi Itno announced his country would respond by suspending visas to U.S. citizens in accordance with the principles of reciprocity. In a post on Facebook, Debi noted that his nation, which faces widespread poverty, could offer no gifts, and he made a barely veiled reference to Qatar giving Trump a luxury Boeing 747 jet to use as Air Force One. Chad has no planes to offer, no billions of dollars to give, but Chad has its dignity and pride, Debi said. Some other African countries were more conciliatory, with Sierra Leone's information minister, Chernor Ba, saying the country will work with U.S. authorities to address the White House concerns. Some of the 12 countries were on the banned list in Trump's first term. North Korea and Syria, which were on the list in the first administration, were spared this time. While many of the listed countries send few people to the United States, Haiti, Cuba, and Venezuela had been major sources of immigration in recent years. Trump tied the new ban to Sunday's firebomb attack in Boulder, Colorado, saying it underscored the dangers posed by some visitors who overstay visas. The suspect is from Egypt, which is not on Trump's restricted list. The Department of Homeland Security says he overstayed a tourist visa. The travel ban results from a January 20th executive order Trump issued requiring government agencies to compile a report on hostile attitudes towards the U.S. and whether entry from certain countries represented a national security risk. Trump said some countries had deficient screening for passports and other public documents or have historically refused to take back their own citizens. He relied extensively on an annual Homeland Security report of people who remain in the U.S. after their visas expired. Measuring overstay rates has challenged experts for decades, but the government has made a limited attempt annually since 2016. Trump's proclamation cites overstay rates for 8 of the 12 banned countries. It's not always clear, though, why some countries are on the list while others are not. Trump's list captures many of the most egregious overstay offenders, but it omits many others. Djibouti, for example, had a 23.9% overstay rate among business visitors and tourists in the year through September 2023, higher than 7 countries on the banned list and 6 on the restricted list. Meanwhile, some countries on the banned list, like Chad, have high overstay rates as a percentage of visitors, but just a few hundred total people suspected of overstaying in a given year. The findings are based on sketchy data and a misguided concept of collective punishment, said Doug Rand, a former Biden administration official at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. U.S. Supreme Court. Justices side with Catholic charity in taxation case. Out of Washington in the AP. The Supreme Court on Thursday handed down a unanimous ruling in a religious rights case, finding that a Catholic charity in Wisconsin can't be required to pay unemployment taxes when other religious groups are exempt. The High Court said the state's tax decisions created an advantage for groups with a more overtly religious tone in their daily work, a violation of the First Amendment. It is fundamental to our constitutional order that the government maintain neutrality between religion and religion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote in the opinion. There may be hard calls to make in policing that rule, but this is not one. Wisconsin argued the Catholic Charities Bureau has paid the tax for more than 50 years and doesn't qualify for an exemption because its day-to-day work doesn't involve religious teachings. Much of the group's funding is from public money, and neither employees nor people receiving services have to belong to any faith, according to court papers. Catholic Charities, though, said that it qualifies because its services to people who are disabled, low-income, or elderly are motivated by religious beliefs, and that the state shouldn't be making determinations about what work qualifies as religious. The Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which represented the group, heralded the ruling as a major victory for religious liberty. It was always absurd to claim that Catholic Charities wasn't religious because it helps everyone, no matter their religion, said Eric Rasbach, vice president and senior counsel. The ruling is expected to allow the Catholic charity to pull out of the state's unemployment system in favor of one operated by the faith. The ruling could have wider effects around the country. Many states have tax exemptions for religious organizations, and some big employers, like hospital systems, that have religious affiliations. It's awfully hard to read the tea leaves into the future, but this ruling could have seismic implications, said tax attorney Lance Jacobs with the firm Forviz Mazars. The group Freedom From Religion condemned the ruling. Treating religiously affiliated nonprofits the same as all other nonprofits is not a violation of the First Amendment, co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor said. The charity appealed to the justices after Wisconsin's highest court ruled against it. President Donald Trump's administration weighed in on behalf of Catholic Charities. The 9-member court is also considering a case over religious objections to books read in public schools. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of your News Gazette, dated Friday, June 6th, 2025. Please stay tuned.